Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. And a warm welcome to the show. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here with you today. We've got a great hour coming up. Dr. Paul Kengor is going to be with us in just a minute, but we've got a couple of minutes before we contact Paul, and we're going to continue on with Answered Prayer Friday. We've got a couple calls still waiting. We're going to talk to Diana from Plymouth. Hello, Diana. How are you?
Hi, Bill. Thanks for stepping into the afternoon.
Oh, my pleasure.
I love your show.
Thanks.
I think I was driving home when you first mentioned this, and I thought, well, I have a perpetual calendar at home that I write God incidences down on or answered prayer. And then as I was scrolling through it, I remembered one that just happened recently, so I thought I'd share it with you. You had a gentleman named Greg Pickering on.
Glenn Pickering.
He was a counselor.
Yeah,
a local
Glenn
counselor.
Pickering. Yes.
Glenn, that was it. I held for a little bit, so it was in my phone.
Right.
That was a great show. Anyways, I have been praying for a couple of years whether I should step into a facilitator leadership position with a Bible study. They've wanted me to take that position, and I've just been kind of holding off on it. Can I do it? Yes, but I don't want to do it unless God is in it and it's His will. Well, Glenn had said that afternoon, after my girlfriends had prayed the night before, God hates it when you don't use your talents. And so that was just really pierced my heart. God just totally used that to say, this is a talent I've given you and I want you to go forward with it. So that was just a recent answer, and I loved it. And I thought since it had something to do with your show, I'd share it.
That's awesome, Diana. Thank you so much for calling, and blessings to you on what God has in store for you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, have a great
afternoon.
Yeah, you too. I've got another caller, Mark from Golden Valley. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Oh, pleasure.
Yeah, my son, he was a heroin addict, and we had been praying for him, but nothing seemed to work. Even though he didn't want to use anymore, nothing was working. But he continued to try over and over again, in and out of treatment centers. Well, one morning, my wife was doing her routine, sitting on the couch, reading her Bible before we go to work. And she had this strong urge to go check on him. He was living at our house. And finally, she decided she had to do it. She was trying to be hands-off mother, but she had to go check. And sure enough, he was laying there not breathing. He was overdosed on heroin. He was already gray skin and purple lips. And she yelled for me to call 911. As an emergency room nurse, she knew just what to do. So he was already getting stiff. She couldn't tip his head back to breathe in. So she blew into his nose, got oxygen there. And if it hadn't been for God sending her up to check on him, we would have came home to a stiff body. But God saved his life.
Well, Mark, that's so powerful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yep, we never gave up, and God had a purpose for him, and now he's doing better. He's doing much better. He's getting married later this summer.
That's fantastic. Oh, that's such a good piece of news. Thank you for calling and sharing that with our listeners and me. It means a lot.
Absolutely. Thanks for letting me do it.
Okay, Mark, thank you so much. All right, we'll take a very short break, and then when we come back, Dr. Paul Kengor will be with us. It is 8 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back.
Have you ever wished you could listen to your favorite radio program when you wanted to? That way you'd never miss a program you really wanted to hear, simply because your program came on when you had an appointment, you were at work, or something urgent came up. And for those really busy days, you could listen early in the morning or late at night when things were calmer, and you could take the time to reflect and meditate on what you heard. Well, you can listen to your favorite programs whenever you want. Download the Faith Radio app by searching Faith Radio in the Apple Store or Google Play Store to gain instant access to Faith Radio programs and previous shows. It really is that simple. Search and subscribe to your favorite program and listen anytime. Download the Faith Radio app today and don't miss a thing. Once again, go to iTunes or Google Play on your mobile device and search for Faith Radio to download the free Faith Radio app and start listening today.
Welcome back to the show. Bill Arnold here with you. Paul Kengor is professor of political science at Grove City College and executive director of the College's Center for Vision and Values. He's a New York Times bestselling author of over a dozen books and is one of my most favorite guests on the show. Hello, Paul.
Hey, Bill. It's good to be with you.
It's nice to be with you and at a more reasonable hour in the afternoon.
Yeah, I'll say. I don't have to get up early and neither do you.
I know. It's just lovely.
Perfect.
Yeah. All right.
And by the way, I can't outdo that last call. Was that from Mark?
Yeah, it's from Mark.
About finding his son. That was really something. Wow. I'm sitting here listening on the other end saying, praise God. That's quite a story.
Yeah. I mean, seconds away from his son being gone.
And if his son was not already gone, it sounded like they maybe brought him back.
Yeah, it does sound that way. Yeah, that's
wow,
amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, appreciate it.
I don't hear that every day before I do a talk show. That's uplifting for sure.
Yeah. Well, this month or last month, I think, was the 50th anniversary of the JFK assassination.
RFK.
That's what I meant.
Yep.
And that is interesting that his assassin is still alive and in prison.
That's right. Yeah, Sirhan was his name. He's still alive, and in fact, he would be, Bill, I'd have to do the math, but he's in his 70s, I believe, early 70s, and he was about the age of Lee Harvey Oswald when Lee Harvey Oswald shot RFK's older brother, JFK, and he was, I mean, this was an absolutely dramatic, traumatic event that completely shook up America at the time, much of the world. I mean, he was, and people forget this too, Bill. This was right after the assassination of Martin Luther King.
What was the time frame on that, Paul?
Yeah, that was April 1968, April 4th, I
wow.
believe.
This was June.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And then
wow.
Bobby Kennedy was in June. So imagine the country, which is still getting over what happened to MLK, and then this happens to RFK. And also, too, I mean, a lot of people stayed up late that night all around the country to find out what the returns were. This was the Democratic primary in the state of California and on the West Coast. And that night, Bobby Kennedy had won the Democratic primary in the state of California. Prior to that point, a lot of people thought, will Kennedy get the nomination? Maybe, but probably not. It's probably going to go to Humphrey or McCarthy, Eugene McCarthy. Hubert Humphrey was LBJ's vice president, probably somebody like that. But man, when he won California that night, the very next morning, the papers should have said, Kennedy on his way to, you know, Democratic nomination in Chicago in August. But instead it said, you know, RFK shot by gunmen at Los Angeles Hotel. And he laid there on the ground. He was shot in the head like his older brother was. And he lived not even 24 hours. They basically kept him alive just long enough for his very young children. He had, I think, 10 children altogether.
Wow.
They were very young. The kids were very. And in fact, his wife was actually pregnant at the time with what would be their final child. Very sad.
Mm-hmm. Now, Paul, Sirhan was a 24-year-old Palestinian Jordanian immigrant. What were his motivations?
Well, he was above all here, Bill. This is very crucial for people to understand this. Today, people do not remember this. It was the one-year anniversary of the Six-Day War that had taken place in the Middle East in June 1967. And that was when Israel, completely surrounded by the Arab states, decided to preemptively attack Egypt, Syria, and Jordan. And that went from June 5th to June 10th, 1967. And so Sirian Sirian, who was not a Muslim, by the way, he was Palestinian Christian, but he was a Palestinian nationalist. He was an Arab, and he vowed revenge. And they found right away, right after the shooting, they got a hold of his diary from his apartment in Los Angeles, and he wrote over and over again, RFK must be assassinated, RFK must be assassinated on or before June 5th, 1968. He wanted to shoot him on the one-year anniversary as retribution for RFK, who apparently Sirhan had liked up until that point. He wanted to shoot him for retribution for supporting Israel against the Arab states in the Six-Day War.
Paul, did the Soviets have anything to do with this?
They had a lot to do with it, and that's something that I think is completely unappreciated in all of this, Bill. The Soviets instigated the Six-Day War. They saw what was happening to America in Vietnam. They looked for another chance to try to really throw things into chaos in foreign policy. America being bogged down in Vietnam. So the Soviets flat out precipitated a crisis in the Middle East and actually provoked that war. And they did this by cooking up false intelligence that the Jews, the Israelis, had moved troops to the Golan Heights near Syria, which was flatly and completely incorrect. And in fact, the Soviet ambassador showed up at the Israeli Prime Minister Levi Eshkol's residence in the middle of the night and said, "You have put your troops on the border towards Syria." And Eshkol said, "We have not. We have not done that." He said, I will drive to the border right now with you. We will get in my car and I will show you that's not happening." And the Soviet ambassador just made a big show and said, no, yet, stormed out of the place because he knew it was a lie. and this is one of the ugliest, most deadliest, insidious cases of Soviet disinformation. And that's saying a lot. That took place in the entire life of the USSR. It precipitated a war in the Middle East, one of the most catastrophic wars in the Middle East. By the way, one that would greatly work to Israel's benefit. Israel tripled in size because it has totally backfired on the Soviets. But you know, one unanticipated consequence of that is it led to the assassination of Bobby Kennedy.
Wow. Paul, you and I have a lot in common, except you're really smart. That's the difference.
Well, I just make it all up.
You don't.
Find out someday that I make it all
no,
up.
No, you don't, my friend. They're going to take a little break. When we come back, more with Dr. Paul Kengor, professor of political science at Grove City College and executive director of the college's Center for Vision and Values. Be right back. It is 18 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here with you, and Paul Kengor is my guest. He's the professor of political science at Grove City College and also the ED of the college's Center for Value and Vision. Paul, if you would, maybe some thoughts about the outgoing Justice Anthony Kennedy.
Yeah, I mean, this is huge. It's a huge opportunity. He's been on the bench for 30 years, right? Going back to 1988, and even then, I mean, he was young when he was put on the bench. I think he was 51, or at least early 50s. So he's not even the oldest member of the bench now. It's Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He's in good shape physically, mentally as well. So, but I think he just decided that it was time to go. He is. I'd have to say that as much as I think that he was overall terrible and a big disappointment to what Ronald Reagan would have anticipated, what Reagan would have wanted. I wrote a piece for American Spectator called Anthony Kennedy, Reagan's Worst Mistake. And this seems odd that I'm going to say this, Bill, having just said that, but probably about 70% of Kennedy's decisions you and I would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the 30% that includes some really, really, really bad ones, and especially on issues of morality and culture for people of faith. And the two that stand out that will be probably the lead paragraph in his Wikipedia entry, you know, for the next 100 years, if God help us, Wikipedia is still around for 100 years. But it would be, one, the Obergefell decision, mm-hmm. redefining marriage in America, which was, you know, one man did that. That wasn't decided by the Congress. It wasn't decided by the states. It was one man in a 5-4 decision, Anthony Kennedy, writing the majority of opinion, redefined something that theretofore had been in America the unique province of the laws of nature and nature's God, right? The idea, you know, marriage was defined between one man and one woman. It wasn't ours to redefine. That was up to God. You know, we didn't mess with that. All the different states had their laws on it. And in one fell swoop, Anthony Kennedy redefined marriage, and not just to include, say, a man and a man or a woman and a woman, but if you read that decision and what he wrote, he has thrown the door wide open for all sorts of marriage configurations simply based on the idea of whether the people involved love each other.
Wow.
Right? Yeah, this is going to be catastrophic. And it's led to already a flurry of religious liberty cases, all of which he voted well on in the last term, in the last couple of weeks. But it's his fault that it's come to that to begin with. And the other decision that was really devastating, Bill, was 1992, Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which Anthony Kennedy wrote the opinion on that, and that preserved Roe versus Wade as the law of the land. And that is exactly what Ronald Reagan and his advisors did not want to see happen and didn't expect to happen when they nominated Anthony Kennedy in November 1987.
Paul, wasn't Robert Bork, wasn't he the candidate that was supposed to get the job in 87?
Yeah, that's right. And isn't that interesting that it turned out that way? I mean, looking back at this, from a liberal progressive point of view, this was a giant coup for them,
mm-hmm.
because they torpedoed a brilliant conservative jurist in Robert Bork, so much so that, you know, Bork became a verb, right? So
right.
You see, now someone's been borked, right? And, you know, he was smeared as anti-woman by the likes of Ted Kennedy, of all people, Joe Biden. And there is nothing anti-woman about him, except
right.
that he was pro-life. I mean, that was it. They treated him viciously. I mean, they searched the guy's garbage. They went down to the Blockbuster video store. Remember the old Blockbuster
sure.
videos,
sure.
Bill? Right?
Yeah.
And they went there to find
I still
out
went there.
What
yeah.
kind. Yeah, they went there to find out what sort of videos he rented.
Wow.
You know, any R-rated videos here? Any pornography? They found out that he liked Fred and Ginger movies. Right? Like Top Hat, Swing
yeah.
Time, right? And then they made fun of him for being a square, right?
Oh,
what a square. And so they ended up voting him down. And then they put forward another judge named Ginsburg, who was not Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but I think it was Doug Ginsburg was his name, who – I don't know if you remember this, Bill, but he had smoked marijuana in the recent past with some of his students in law school, and that was found out, so they dropped that. And so Kennedy became the third nominee, and he's the one that got the nod. He's the one that was approved, and you know, liberals can thank their stars. He would go on to preserve Roe versus Wade and redefine marriage in America.
Wow. Paul, what would you anticipate with the nomination hearing coming up that we would expect to see from the left?
Well, they're going to be vicious. And I mean, look at the Neil Gorsuch vote, right? I mean, it's almost 50-50. It's going to be a party line vote, probably going to need Mike Pence as vice president to come in and cast the tiebreaker. Republicans got to hope that they can get every single one of their own people on this. And the big concern there is going to be liberal pro-Republicans like Susan Collins from Maine. And you know, any of the final three or four that we're seeing on Trump's list, they all seem to be pro-life. And so no matter who it is, they're going to go after him or her, because one of them is Amy Coney Barrett, who I think would really drive them nuts if they nominated her. She's a Notre Dame law professor mm-hmm. with seven kids.
yeah.
Teaches natural law, mm-hmm. pro-life, and yeah, I don't know, what's the verb? Can you get a borked type verb out of Amy Coney Barrett?
Probably.
Maybe barretted? Would that be the new phrase?
Yeah, probably. So, Paul,
maybe
you would also mention on the Supreme Court decision about in California, a law that was forcing pro-life crisis pregnancy centers to advertise abortions.
Yeah, that's a crazy case, and that happened in the last couple of weeks. And here again, you know, Justice Kennedy actually voted well on this one. All of Kennedy's votes in this final term were good, but that was one 5-4 decision where it is incredible as it sounds, but the pro-choice progressives in California, showing their great tolerance, they imposed upon crisis pregnancy centers, which are created for the purpose of offering alternatives to abortion. That's why they're created. They're created as non-abortion centers. And California state law back in 2015 required that these crisis pregnancy centers advertise and provide actual telephone numbers for the women who come in to find abortion services, abortion clinics, and the crisis pregnancy center said, we're not going to do that. That's not what we do. We don't do abortion. Our whole point is not to do abortion. And a number of them are Christian pro-life centers. They have religious missions, and they said, this, if you're going to force us to do this, this violates our mission. This violates our freedom of religion, our freedom of conscience, our freedom of speech. And Clarence Thomas wrote the majority decision 5-4 in favor of the pro-life centers. Anthony Kennedy joined the 5-4 majority, and the four liberals on the court, the Clinton and Obama appointees, they all voted against the pro-life centers. They voted to impose upon the pro-life centers a mandatory fiat, judicial fiat, that they advertise abortion services.
Mm-hmm. Paul, I always learn so much when we talk. I so appreciate you coming on the show as well.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Does this time work good for you in the afternoons?
It does. It's a good time for me. Let's stay in touch.
I will call you regularly then.
All right.
Thanks for being on the show,
Paul.
Have a great weekend. Yep.
All right. Have a good weekend.
Thanks so much. It's 28 minutes after the hour. We'll take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. Kent Kaiser about some of the upcoming potential nominees for the Supreme Court seat. Be back in a minute.
Wait, caveman, new geometry? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. Okay, they weren't exactly cavemen, but archaeologists estimate that unknown people built Stonehenge, a monument in southwest England, around 2500 BC. Its purpose remains a mystery, as does the identity of its builders. What's not a mystery is their brilliance. According to a new book about Stonehenge, the builders used the Pythagorean theorem to design it. The problem is Pythagoras, the Greek mathematician credited with discovering his theorem, wasn't born until 2,000 years after Stonehenge's construction. This has baffled historians and their conventional traditional picture of ancient Brits as primitive cavemen-like people. And yet, as the Tech Times explains, they'd have to have been skilled at geometry to use the theorem and construct a marvel like Stonehenge, which still stands today. The idea that we're advanced and that the ancients were ignoramuses is a modern myth. But if all humans bear God's image, we'd expect mathematicians, even in the Stone Age. I'm John Stone Street.
Welcome back to the show. You know, whenever you want to know more about important and interesting stuff, I always call Dr. Ken Kaiser, Chair of Communications here at the University of Northwestern, and I love talking Supreme Court stuff with Kent, and he's in the studio right now with me. Hello, Kent.
Hello.
Well, let's get right to it. It looks like now that there is going to be wildness going on with the appointment, the nomination of a new Supreme Court justice coming up Monday.
Right. That's when President Trump said that he's going to announce who his nominee will be. And in all honesty, if the Republicans and the Senate stick together, there's nothing the Democrats can do to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
But they will, of course, scream and yell and everything between the nomination and when the person's actually confirmed. Personally, I think that even if President Trump were to nominate Merrick Garland, the one who Obama put up, who never got a hearing, I bet mm-hmm. if President Trump put up Merrick Garland, that even the Democrats would oppose even him. I don't want him to try that, but mm-hmm. I just say that's how obstinate the Democrats are at this point.
Yeah. Well, let's pay some tribute to Justice Kennedy on his way out. What can you say about his tenure with the Supreme Court? He was a strong protector of speech, wasn't he?
He was, and mm-hmm. he was reliable, I would say, on economic and business issues and issues that I guess most people would consider to be not the social issues,
mm-hmm.
and a very reliable conservative on things like property rights. And,
mm-hmm.
But on the social issues, he was a wild card.
Yeah, he swung left on the death penalty.
Yeah, and you know, you never on marriage, and you never really knew where he was going to come down on an issue, and so everybody would be just like, well, I mean, he was known as the swing vote for that reason.
Mm-hmm. And he was once praised by the LGBTQ community. Now he's more or less being vilified because he's not staying in office until there's a Democratic president.
Yeah, think of how old he is, and he's finally decided to retire, and they're vilifying him because he's leaving too early and not waiting for whoever the next Democratic president might be in 2025.
Right, right.
You know, so, think about that. They're asking him to stay in office, in the Supreme Court, another 6 years.
Right.
7 years, really.
So I until mean, you're 90.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah, that's only if you're not going to be selfish.
Yeah,
I don't want
right.
you to be selfish.
Right.
All right, so let's talk about who could be a possible candidate. According to candidate Trump, he had produced a list of possible Supreme Court justices, and he's still working off that list, isn't he?
Well, he is. He's added some. He has added some names to that list. And
you didn't get added, did you?
Alas, no.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But it's a good list. It's a very solid list, I would say. It'll be interesting to see who he actually nominates on Monday to see, you know, where he goes, in a sense, politically.
Mm-hmm.
There's one candidate for a potential nominee who is favored by Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Senate. Ultimately, Mitch McConnell is the one who's going to need to usher this nomination through the Senate. And he did a great job of getting Trump's first appointment through, knowing exactly who was going to vote against that nomination, and
mm-hmm.
and you know, I'm sure that he is holding them accountable for that, and you know, got them to sort of commit to something else that he would need later on when he needed to call in their vote. So he's very good at counting noses. He's been doing a great job with ushering through all kinds of federal nominations for the courts so far. But Mitch McConnell's favorite is an Indian American.
Who is that?
His name is Amul Thapar.
Okay.
And I think that he might be a leading candidate if Trump decides to go sort of the safe political route, because I really think that even because Mitch McConnell is so supportive of this particular judge,
mm-hmm.
that would probably he'd probably get through pretty easily, because I think Mitch McConnell would really put a lot of enthusiasm behind that. Now, my favorite happens to be a 46-year-old woman who I don't like her just because – I mean, I like her for more than just the fact that she's a woman and a conservative, but mm-hmm. also because she is so young.
She's 46, huh?
She's 46 years old.
Yeah.
And that's Amy Barrett, and she's a former Notre Dame professor. So we have that in common, that we're professors. But I think that, you know, I just like the fact that she's very young, very conservative, and a female. Mm-hmm. Right now we have three justices on the Supreme Court who are women, but they're all extremely liberal.
Now, I don't know if I have this right, Kent, but when the president nominated Neil Gorsuch, I understand that second on that list was Judge Thomas Hardiman, and he has experience working with President Trump's sister, Marianne Trump Barry, who served with Hardiman on the Third Circuit Court and has been described as high on Hardiman. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that he probably, I mean, that would be a good pick, I think, too. It, you know, on that court, Trump's sister and Hardiman would be the opposite ends of the political spectrum. Trump's sister is extremely liberal as a judge. So what I think that we're going to have to look for, you know, and once we hear who the nominee is, you know, how long have they been on the bench and what kind of record do they have? Some of these nominees have long records where we can pretty well tell where they stand,
mm-hmm.
Particularly Mitch McConnell's pick, you know, and some of them have been serving in the D.C. district, which means that they've been dealing with issues that are likely to come to the Supreme Court. And that district, by the way, has been sort of a funnel to the Supreme Court. You know, several justices in recent years have actually come from that district.
Yeah.
So
who does the vetting for these candidates?
Well, Trump has actually put together a team.
Okay.
And interestingly, he's put his communications director on that. And I'm forgetting the communications director's name, but he's an Indian American too.
Okay.
So, you know, whether that helps the one candidate, I'm not certain.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously what I think is interesting there is that he's got this great list, and that list has come from outside groups. I know he's had help from the Federalist Society and others in putting together this list. That's why I think it's a good list. I think that they would have done a good job of vetting these folks.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that he puts the communications person on this team of vetting, because that tells us that he's looking for maybe a public relations boon from this, mm-hmm. and trying to avoid anything bad too, of course.
Yeah.
But I think that that's probably part of it. He's looking for a good public relations boost.
I don't want to go back to Judge Hardiman, but I find it interesting that he also went to the University of Notre Dame. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
His undergrad there, and he financed his law degree at Georgetown University Law Center by driving a taxi.
Yeah, no, this guy, the beauty about this guy is, like, he's a normal person. I mean, well, you know, we talk about who's on the Supreme Court, and it's often really the Ivy Leagues, people from the coast.
Total.
And Hardiman really came up from, I mean, you know, if Trump wants to maybe in some way or another appeal to his base of sort of blue collar voters, that would be the pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a guy who, honestly, most middle Americans could see their own kid rising through the ranks and becoming a Supreme Court justice. For the most part, when you look at most Supreme Court justices, most Americans can't look at those folks and say, oh, that could be my kid someday.
So true.
Most people are not sending their kids to the Ivy Leagues and you know, it's a completely different world.
Yeah. Now, on a weekend interview, Maria Bartiromo was interviewing President Trump, and she asked him, when you are when you nominate someone, are you going to ask if they're in favor of Roe v. Wade, in favor of it, or in favor of repealing it? And he said, I don't think you go there.
Right. And honestly, I don't think he needs to. I think people in the Senate are going to try and get at that again by asking whether they will work off a precedent or whether they're going to interpret the law or whatever. And that's always code when you hear a senator saying that they want the nominee to honor precedent. That's code for they want them to honor Roe v. Wade.
Of course.
It really comes down to that one issue.
Mm-hmm.
So if they say something different, that they're a constitutionalist or originalist or things like that, then that's going to be a red flag to those senators who are pro-abortion.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me take a little break. When I come back, more with Dr. Kent Kaiser, chair of the communications here at the University of Northwestern. Take a very short break and be back in a minute. Welcome back to the show. I have in studio Dr. Kent Kaiser, who's chair of the Communications Department here at the University of Northwestern. We're talking about Supreme Court, and Kent is supremely up on all the issues relating to the Supreme Court. Kent, let me ask you this. When a candidate is being grilled, why wouldn't the right or the conservatives play the same game the liberals play? For example, Barack Obama said, "I believe marriage is between one man and one woman." Hillary Clinton, "I believe," remember her way back when? "I believe marriage is between one man and one woman." All right. And then all of a sudden, I've evolved on it.
Well, right. And that was a pretty quick evolution, as you might recall, with many, many people in the Democratic Party, especially. I don't know if there's ever been sort of a change in view of a social issue quite so quick as that. And some would say that the court got out ahead of itself a little bit, which I think many people would go back to Roe v. Wade and say they did the same thing there. I think a lot of people were shocked at that decision back at that time. Now we've come to live with it, or babies die with it, I guess. But I think that, you know, when it comes to these questions of these nominees, I think that it's a lot of show. I think that what they need to do is to avoid any pitfalls, any minefields. Because these people have been vetted beforehand. I think that I think we're beyond the days when somebody is nominated to the Supreme Court and then their decisions are a surprise to us.
Mm-hmm.
That happened with the first President Bush, you might recall, where he had at least one or two nominees who turned out to be not very conservative at all.
Right.
And I think we're maybe beyond that because of how political Washington has become, and also because of how close the Supreme Court is. I mean, it's been 4-4-1, and the one being Kennedy, who just resigned, who retired. And so this is a really key replacement because it is going to determine the balance of the court. But I don't think that Trump is going to be working off of any kind of a list where he doesn't know exactly where these people are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that that's part of the vetting process. You know, and there's others on the list who are interesting. You know, Senator Mike Lee of Utah is on the list. It'd be interesting if he were the nominee. I mean, we all know where he stands politically, very clearly, because he's taken votes on these things. I wonder if it makes it more difficult for his Senate colleagues to vote against him. I mean, you never hear of him being disliked. It's not as though he's a Ted Cruz or something, or others maybe don't like him. So what if he were the nominee? I think maybe he'd sail right through.
Yeah. Antonin Scalia was voted in 98-0.
Right.
I mean, I think that's a landslide.
Yeah,
I haven't checked
much.
The numbers.
There are probably
lately.
Two absences that day.
Yeah, there probably were. But yeah. I mean, I'm saying that is radically different today. This is going to be a huge fight, isn't it?
Well, right. No, and even with as recently as with Obama's nominees, they went through with, you know, overwhelmingly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only right now that this with
because they know
Trump,
what's at stake.
That's right. With President Trump, and they know what's at stake, especially with this. What has been a swing seat for the last couple decades.
Does it make sense to try to get this this person nominated sooner than later, or is there wisdom in waiting closer to the election time to the midterms to mobilize voters?
I think it's vital to do it now.
Why?
I think we don't want to have people floating the idea out there that, oh, we should just wait till after the election. No, we should get this done so that this justice is ready to go once the term begins. Well, their term begins in October. So this person should be ready to go when the new Supreme Court term starts in October. There shouldn't be cases next June where we have one justice who's not weighing in.
That's
because
true.
He wasn't there
or
she wasn't there for the arguments.
You're making sense now, Kent.
Okay.
You're going ahead and making sense. I love that. So tell me about the process and how does it work and what kind of grilling is going to happen?
Well, it'll probably take place over a couple of weeks, and then there'll be a vote. And at this point, you need only 50 votes, and there are 51 Republican senators. And so they can afford to have a defector. But on the other hand, I guess I wouldn't rule out the idea that a Democrat could vote for this nominee. And I think that this is another reason to do it now. I think that there probably are a couple of Democrats, especially Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota.
Joe Manchin
from West Virginia.
There's some red state Democrats
out
there.
Who are Democrats in very conservative states And I think if they vote against this nominee, that will be ammunition for their opponents, in especially for Heitkamp in November.
So Murkowski and Collins are the Republicans that were the Republicans are worried about.
Right. And I don't know if we necessarily worry so much about Murkowski, but, you know, Collins for sure from Maine. He's a very liberal Republican.
Yeah. And if we get a couple of red state Democrats that vote for whoever Trump nominates, I think it's going to pass.
Right, and I think that there's, you know, there's horse trading that goes on, I suppose, in a vote like this. I think that, you know, if Joe Manchin gets some kind of a deal where the Republican Party won't campaign very hard against him, or if Heidi Heitkamp is promised, in a way, wink, wink, some kind of an appointment if she loses the election in November, it's easy to pick up those votes. That's what I would be doing if I were on that committee. If I were on the vetting committee, I would be saying, okay, here's who our candidates are. I'd be calling up Heidi Heitkamp's office and I'd be like, what would it take for you to vote for this particular candidate? I'd also be calling up Susan Collins' office, but I'd be calling up Joe Manchin's office and I'd be asking him, you know, what will it take for you to vote for this nominee.
Mm-hmm. So we call that horse trading, and that really goes on, doesn't it?
It really does go on, and Mitch McConnell's great at it. And so, I mean, I hope they bring Mitch McConnell into this to discuss how this takes place. But, you know, ultimately, you know, I hope we get a really conservative new justice.
Mm-hmm.
I have my favorite, but, you know, I think that any of the ones who are on Trump's short list would be good.
Yeah, and you can expect the media and the press will wage an all-out war against whoever gets nominated.
Exactly. You know, there's one potential nominee who has some interesting tweets. They're not. They talked about how they're almost like controversial. He tweeted about puppies, and he tweeted about baking a cornbread in the shape of Texas instead of in the shape of Colorado or Wyoming. And they're making a deal out of this as if this is something scandalous. And it's more or less, I don't know, precious. It's cute, you know, whatever. But they're making it seem like he's weird for tweeting about what I guess might be trivial, trivial kinds of
what
cute
do you
things.
What do you think the liberal judges are saying to each other? I'm just curious. I mean, if a conservative judge gets nominated, and now it's going to be slanted conservative. Would some of the liberal judges go, what's the point of me hanging in here now?
No, no, no. I think that they're going to stick around to squawk louder than ever. You know, it used to be the Supreme Court was quite quiet. They didn't really chime in very much until probably the last 20 years. And now they all want to write an opinion. I mean, there's an opinion, and then there's a concurring opinion, and there's dissenting opinions. And it wasn't the case in the past that everyone was writing concurrence or dissents. That just didn't happen. And also, it used to be the case that not that many would talk, even in the oral arguments. There wouldn't be so many questions. Now there are. Mm-hmm. Now that the court is taped, you know, we get an audio tape, not a videotape, but an audio tape. And ever since they've instituted that, now we hear a lot from the justices. And then they go out and give speeches. And so I think that it just makes them desire to stay there even more and to squawk louder.
So, Kent, who would be assuming the mantle of the new swing justice? Would it be John Roberts?
It probably would be John Roberts at this point. I mean, he probably would be the one who would be the closest to the center. But, you know, he's the one who gets to choose what gets heard. And so I guess we would hope that he would choose the issues. I think he's been pretty wise about what he's chosen that the court would hear.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised about his decision on Obamacare?
Very much so. Mm-hmm. Very, very disappointed in that one. I want to hope that it's part of some grander plan, that there's some other legislation that will come up in front of the court that they'll have to go back and say, well, the precedent from Obamacare was this, and therefore on this issue, and that the liberal justices will have to squirm over that one, just like all the rest of us squirmed as we saw that decision come out on Obamacare.
Mm-hmm. So just so I try to understand this, the appointment of the Supreme Court, the new agenda starts in October. Is that right?
Correct.
Correct. So this really does have to get happening this summer?
Well, it doesn't have to, but
well, I mean, it'd be nice if it did.
Nice if it did,
because
you know, when we had that gap of time when there were only eight justices and there were four decisions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kent, thanks. I appreciate your information and your take on all this, and we'll be real curious to see what happens next Monday when President Trump does make his announcement as to who the nominee is going to be.
Sounds good.
So thanks for coming into the studio, and we'll look forward to having another conversation like in about a week.
Thanks for having me on.
Dr. Kent Kaiser, we'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute.
Pray Together Sunday is a simple opportunity for churches to join with congregations across America to ask God for spiritual renewal in our country. Ask your church to join us for Pray Together Sunday on July 8th and commit to a time of prayer for our country during your church's Sunday worship service. Together, we will lift our voices on behalf of our communities and nation. Register and find resources for your church at nae.net/praytogether. Pray Together Sunday on July 8th is organized by the National Association of Evangelicals, where we use influence for good.
It is 5 minutes until the top of the hour. I hope your week was good. And in the middle of this week has been the wonderful 4th of July holiday, Independence Day, and kind of messed up the week a little bit, didn't it? When you woke up Thursday, it felt like, day is this? I think it's Monday. So now we've got the weekend ahead of us, which, frankly, I'm looking forward to. It's going to be nice to enjoy the beautiful weather we're having in the greater Twin Cities area. And I hope it's nice where you are this weekend. It is the perfect summer weather. 82 and sunny. I love that.
Well, it doesn't get much better than that, which is probably a good thing, considering this is going to be the weekend. If you didn't get to celebrate before, now you get to celebrate. So hopefully, I will go out on a limb and say there will be lots of cookouts, probably folks at the lake, and just hopefully some really good, safe family time for everybody. Relaxation. We need that
time. That sounds good. So if you have not downloaded the Faith Radio app, I insist you do, because it's so cool. So just go to your Apple App Store or Google Play and just type in Faith Radio and you will find it, and then you can download it. And then you will have the great programs that are on the network throughout the day, access to live streaming and shows you missed and podcasts. And you can read some of the newest articles and discover all kinds of opportunities to connect. So if you're streaming online, welcome. And for our friends in Bismarck at 89.1, I hope you've had a great week, and in Hartford at 94.1 and 93.1 in Waterloo, 104.7 in Madison, and of course at 90.7 and 97.5 FM in the Twin Cities. We're a big happy family around here, and I am so glad to be here in the chair from this time of the day. Of course, Susie Larson was here for 8 years, and she was a one of a kind. There was nobody like her, and that's really an honor to be sitting here and carrying on the great tradition of afternoons here at Faith Radio. So I'm here to serve you. So if you ever have any show segment ideas or people you want me to talk to, I am absolutely open to your ideas, because I'm here for you. And you can email me, bill@myfaithradio.com, with a suggestion of a guest you might like me to talk to, or a subject you would like one of our special guests that we have on regularly to cover. We have access to some of the greatest minds. So please give me ideas, as I would love to respond. And I loved the Answered Prayer Friday. That was a lot of fun, and we got some great calls, and that was very encouraging.
That's really one of those days when you think, do they pay us to do this?
To get to listen to God working in this
network? That's amazing.
It is. Have a great weekend, everybody. I'll see you Monday. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.